Legends Podcast, episode 11.
Hello and welcome to the Campaign Creations Podcast. Tonight, Labyrinth, the Skydomesque, and myself, Dread, were returning from what turned out to be a two-week hiatus from the podcast. During that time, of course, a lot of interesting things have happened, mostly on the side of Blizzard. They've announced BlizzCon, woohoo, and they've also announced something new for StarCraft II in the Collector's Edition. Once we discuss that a little bit, we're also going to move into a new direction. We're not going to be focusing entirely on StarCraft II, so much as we're going to kind of veer out towards campaigns, mod creation in general, although these concepts can be applied to, video game industry creation and anything really. We're going to be focusing on game element concepts, specifically the methodologies that one of our great modders, Skydomesque, uses whenever he tries to construct a mod, look at a campaign, or really how he picks apart and splits the design of any game. So once again, I welcome back from a two-week hiatus, Labyrinth and Skydomesque. How are you two doing tonight?
I'm really sick, so my voice may not be as good as it usually is.
I'm doing just dandy.
Okay, well, good. In the meantime, BlizzCon was just announced. It's going to be in October, not August. I'm a little bit disappointed about that. But, Labyrinth, I know that you're going to be going, and hopefully I'll be going with you. What are one of the things you're looking forward to this year to see from the convention?
Unfortunately, I'll be guilty and say that it's what's next for Diablo 3. I think they're going to say much more on StarCraft 2. And the Cataclysm, I can wait, since I already know the majority of things.
But I mean, really, how could you say that there's not going to be much to do with StarCraft 2? Isn't there even the slim possibility that StarCraft 2 is even going to be sold at BlizzCon 2010? I mean, it's coming out in October. The convention's in October. I mean, most people are suspecting the game's going to come out soon thereafter, if not then.
Oh, I can believe it'll be sold there, but that doesn't mean that, If anything, what, they're just going to announce the next expansion? Big whoop. I don't think they would let people see what it's going to be about or how it's going to play, since probably the goal would be to sell StarCraft 2, not the expansion.
True. I guess I'm kind of looking forward to probably seeing a little bit more about Cataclysm specifically, maybe kind of a hint or a treat to seeing the in-game Deathwing, possibly, or the possibility that they might start the beta, if not a little bit earlier before BlizzCon. Anyways, Skydomesque, I know you're probably not going to be able to join us at the convention, but I mean, if you've watched it in the past, what are you hoping to see come out of BlizzCon this year?
I'm gonna go with Lab on this one. I'm a lot more interested in Diablo 3 than anything else right now. Semi-interested in Cataclysm. I mean, probably not gonna be anything terribly exciting to come out of that, other than potential resources for later projects. But I'm mostly interested to see if they're gonna actually start adding things like bump maps into Diablo 2 characters and actually start dramatically improving how it looks over everything else. And they're possibly also going to announce another character class or something like that. So, hopefully we see a huge update to Diablo 3.
Well, I'm certain that that's going to happen this year. With the possibility of StarCraft 2 being released around the time of BlizzCon, we've of course seen that Blizzard announced that the StarCraft 2 Collector's Edition will be released for the game. It's going to be roughly $100 USD, I think, was going to be the price for it. Came with a number of interesting things, including a World of Warcraft in-game pet of a Thor. A flash drive that included the original StarCraft and Brood War? Are you guys both planning to pick up the Collector's Edition? Is this something you're going to pre-order even? Labyrinth, how about yourself?
I'll definitely be pre-ordering the Collector's Edition. I mean, why not, It's only $40 more. Or is it 40 or 30? Anyway, $100 ain't too bad for a collector's edition, considering it has quite an immense amount of stuff.
So, are you gonna buy six of them like you did with the poker set?
Not quite. Maybe just one for myself.
So, I guess, just really quickly, I want, you know, kind of your comment on... It's gonna be $100. There are two more expansions to come. They could be $100 each. A lot of people have been pointing out I'm going to be paying $300 for the StarCraft II trilogy. Do you think that's a little excessive?
I want to say no, considering nowadays, even though games seem to be long. I mean, here I am playing Final Fantasy 13, and I'm 60 hours in, but and that's only, what, $50 for me when I got it? Fact is, it's, you know, two expansions that are going to be the same length as the original game, so it's basically like you're getting, you know, a full-on new game. And I'd say it's better than calling it StarCraft 3 and StarCraft 4.
Possibly. Iskatomesk, now I want your opinion. First, are you going to be picking up StarCraft 2? Two, if you do, are you going to pick up the collectors? And what do you think about the possibility of spending upwards of $300 for a collector's trilogy?
I just want to quickly say that Broader and other people have said that they are aiming for a second quarter release, which is a really, really, really long time before BlizzCon. So I mean, there's always a possibility they're going to delay it because this is Blizzard, but I mean, they're like halfway through the beta, or getting close to halfway through their beta, at least their desired time allotment for the beta. And when the beta ends, I mean, you're probably looking at like only a couple of weeks between that and release, so I'm pretty sure that release is inevitably going to be a long time before BlizzCon comes. As for StarCraft 2, I'm still on the fence on whether I want to buy it or not. The editor is ultimately going to determine that. As for the collectors, well, I really do like art books. It's kind of hard for me to locate really good artwork to use for inspiration, so, you know, I got like the God of War 3 collectors and such like that. And, Wings of Liberty collector is boasting a 176 page art book, and I actually bought the World of Warcraft art book as well. I think it was World of Warcraft. No, it was like Warcraft 3 and World of Warcraft. They are really, really nice books, and if that's anything to base it by, then that would probably be worth the cost all in itself. Also, the behind the scenes DVD commentary with developer interviews and such might be interesting. And the cinematics, it's always nice to have those offhand. And you know, you have the soundtrack CD, you can pull FLAC files off of those and be happy with that. And you get a Thor mini pet in World of Warcraft, oh my god. And you can probably imagine that it's gonna do stuff like shoot the Zergling mini pet and stuff, and I mean, that'd be hilarious. One thing I'm kind of curious about is that if you look at their Collector's Edition announcement, the very last bullet point says exclusive Battle.net downloadable content, including special purchases for your Battle.net profile, decals to customize your in-game units, and a visually unique version of the Terran Thor. Now, specifically, this last thing says two things. First of all, there's no way in hell they're ever removing the Thor. There is, as Thoraxel said, a very small group of extremely powerful people that are absolutely assuring the Thor is never getting removed. And two, this raises a question. Is this visually unique version of the Thor only for collectors people? And do other people see this visually unique version of the Thor? How do they plan to implement this? Is this really a good idea? Because it's introducing a change. I'm not sure it's going to be really welcome. I mean, it's a cool idea, but I'm not really sure this belongs in StarCraft 2. The other question is, of course, is the decals unique to the Collector's Edition? Or is this just extra decals? Will the game accept custom decals like a Dawn of War? From what it sounds like, it won't. As for $300, well, keep in mind they were saying like a year separation between each expansion, so it's not like you're dumping $300 all at one go, which would be pretty ludicrous unless you're like, you know, buying them all at once. And if you insist on buying three collector's editions, chances are you're doing that for the content, and upon which case you're already prepared to spend that money anyways. So I don't think that's going to be a really big issue. I mean, it is really pricey, and buying a collector's edition does put pretty big hole in my pocket, but I mean, 176 page art book in the first game, that's pretty appetizing. So if I buy it, I will probably be buying the collector's.
So just to pick up on one thing, you mentioned, like, of course, the Thor, the custom Thor. You don't think that fits in StarCraft 2 primarily because of the standardization, kind of normalization between what the game should look like for one person or another for the competitive play? Or, like, would it make a dramatic difference if the Thor, you know, had a slightly different, you know, model or just looked a little bit different? I mean, what's the great impact on, you know, giving a few people just a treat to look at a different Thor, something they might only see?
Well, it really depends on what they're going to do. Because, you know, if they aim to make the Thor not very different, so that it's really, really easy to identify between games, or, you know, with multiple players using multiple Thors, some of which are collectors and some of which are not, then that doesn't really justify making that a feature, at least a very big feature. So it's kind of really on the fence on what exactly they intend to do with that and what direction they intend to move with that. I think it's kind of strange that they're doing that, especially from a competitive standpoint. It makes sense to make everything standardized, but I'm not really sure where they plan to go with that, so I guess we'll just have to see.
So Scott and Musk, would you say that with the inclusion of custom decals in the Collector's Edition, that, you know, if they decide not to allow anybody to just customize their own decals, that it's going to kind of go the way of Xbox Live, downloadable content, and it's going to force people to pay some sort of nominal fee to download these custom decals for their races? Is that where you think it's going?
Yeah, that's where I think it's going. I'm pretty sure Blizzard is not going to allow custom decals. A lot of people were hoping for that. They were like, oh my god, it's going to be like Dunwoody, you're going to have awesome custom decals. But it doesn't sound like it's going to be like that, because if it was like that, then, you know, people could just crop images of the collector decals and pop them in and be like, a little back door. I'm pretty sure that decals are going to be a lot like portraits in that you either unlock them or you buy them, or they're special features of the collector's editions. And they're probably just going to be of the faction icons, and maybe a couple of special ones.
Okay. Personally, I'm definitely going to be picking up the Collector's Edition, regardless of the price. I bought the Collector's Art Book at BlizzCon for World of Warcraft, Wrath of the Lich King, and I'll pick up the StarCraft 2 one because it's going to have an art book in it. And besides everything else, that's just awesome. The WoW in-game pet, though, that's also a big plus for me. I mean, I play World of Warcraft, and I like cute little pets, so it'll match my grunty really well. Moving on to our next big major topic, game element concepts. What kind of methodologies does our very own Escatomusk use when he's developing his mods or looking at any game that's really been created in the last, well, ever? Escatomusk, if I can just send this to you right away, could you maybe, you know, define what game element concepts are and, you know, how they apply to your, you know, to your development scheme?
Well, if you've ever seen me talk about projects, you usually see that I'm most concerned about graphics. And if I don't have graphics, the project doesn't go anywhere. This is because I already have my gameplay already figured out, usually long before the actual project is already started. And the reason I can do this is because I have created what I call GECs, Gameplay Elements Concepts. And these are not to be treated as rails or guidelines, but rather as a methodology of approaching gameplay. Since this is a very big subject, I'll be mostly just summarizing the four elements in this podcast, and we can go on to specifics in later episodes. So the Gameplay Elements concept focuses on four elements, and these four elements all have equal value to each other. And the overall goal of the GEC is for your project to provide immersion and environment. The goal of mods in particular should not be to establish all insane, crazy gameplay that is amazing and new, because usually that just crashes and burns and you go nowhere. As a campaign, obviously you are attempting to tell a story, you're bringing up characters and such like that. The GEC is to be treated independently of your story, rather as a way of conveying your story and means to integrate your story into the game. The four elements that the GEC is comprised of are gameplay, which is pretty obvious, graphics, which are extremely important to convey your world and bring life to your world, sound, the most overlooked aspect of games and mods to date is sound. Sound is voice acting, music, SFX for units, such like that, and AI. Artificial intelligence is also incredibly important and one of the other overlooked things. In a mod, you absolutely must have custom AI so your players can play single player. Because chances are, unless you're Valve or someone, you're not going to have a very large player base for your mod, especially in the beginning. And no player base and no AI means your players can't play with anyone, they're not going to be able to enjoy it. Interest will die instantly or never grow in the first place. So you must have custom AI. In a campaign, the stakes are even higher. Because the AI ultimately determines how your player experiences the campaign. Is it an RPG? Okay, how are the bosses going to act? Is it an RTS? How's your AI opponents and allies going to act? The AI should be difficult while avoiding excessive cheating. It should take full advantage of its units. And it is, most importantly, it establishes a personality. So if you're playing a campaign and say you're playing a crazy warlord, like an orc warlord who's just batshit insane, he should be attacking you all over the place, incessantly. And, you know, the AI helps establish the personality of your opponents. It's really, really important. So we're just going to go down these elements. I'm just going to summarize their very, very, just very basic points of these elements, which is why what makes them important. I just mentioned AI. The other thing about AI is that you should also be prepared to make sacrifices for your AI. If you notice in my StarCraft mods, I really, really avoided messing with custom spells and turrets and stuff like that. And that's because the AI doesn't use those. And I wanted to avoid putting things into the game that the AI couldn't use. You know, if you give an air unit a turret, the player can use it fine, but the AI just flips out and it just makes a big mess. So I always am prepared to make sacrifices, whatever is necessary, so the AI can do all it can do. In a game like StarCraft 2, the AI is a lot more open to you, so you won't have to really make any sacrifices for it. But in a more closed game like StarCraft 1, it's something you have to be very conscious about. Sound. Now, you know, as voice actors, especially Labyrinth, you know, he makes videos, he makes commercials, he knows the importance of good dialogue, of good sound effects, and what they bring to the game. I have always fully voice acted all of my mods since day one in 1999. Voice acting, it's kind of one of those black arts, which, you know, people attempt but are usually not really good at. There are resources out there to get decent voice actors. Obviously, you want something to present to them first. But you cannot overlook custom sounds in your mod. If you have a total conversion and there's no sounds in it, it's not a total conversion and you're missing a huge portion of bringing your world to life. Custom sound effects are very important. You know, having custom weapon sounds for your new flashy death ray, very important. And another thing is to use custom sounds as often as possible where applicable. You know, a lot of games out there don't have a lot of custom sounds because either the sound channel is getting eaten, or of development constrictions, or of file space. As a mod, you have none of those restrictions at all, except for channels. But I mean, StarCraft 2 supports 128 channels. You're not going to be running into that problem ever. Use custom sounds often. Footsteps, mechanics, environmental, ambience. Sounds are huge, and music is huge. I'm probably going to end up devoting a podcast episode entirely to talking about music because that's just a ridiculously huge subject. And I'll also talk about building your SFX library and stuff like that. Moving on, graphics. A lot of people will say, well, gameplay means everything. You don't need to worry about graphics. That's incorrect. Sound, AI, graphics, these are all just as important as gameplay. And the reason for that is because they all contribute to the overall prose and feeling of your project. When a player plays your project, he's not just experiencing gameplay, he's experiencing everything that you have presented to him. your sound, your graphics, your AI, and your gameplay. Your gameplay is merely a means of conveying your graphics, sounds, and AI. The AI and gameplay kind of go hand in hand because they're both dependent of each other. Graphics are very, very, very important. You can't rely on just simple kit bashes. You should get the highest quality possible graphics. They should be fluid, they should conform to a basic style, so you know if you're using graphics ported from World of Warcraft, and then, you know, something styled more like Dawn of War 2, and their textures don't really fit together, it's gonna look really weird. If you're using kit bashes in StarCraft 1 and then custom models, it's gonna look like a big goddamn mess. Another thing that I always do is gear my graphics towards high-end gaming systems. I always make my graphics as good as they can look, and I'm always prepared to sacrifice performance. The reason for that is because my development time can be very long, and you know, hardware is always improving. You don't need to skimp out, you don't need to make it attend to the lowest possible system, because by the time you make a big project that has a lot of custom graphics, computer hardware in general is going to be a lot more powerful. And I always have a very powerful system anyways. So I'm making something that plays well for me. I always make a project that I enjoy. Graphics, I always go for impact. I have as much effects and as much flash and as much glow as possible while still keeping the readability stable. You know, you can look at ITAS for StarCraft. There's a lot of really big ships and a lot of really big explosions. In fact, the GEC for ITAS can be summarized as big ships, big guns, big explosions. That's literally the summary of the entire game plan from the mod, and it works really well, and it's still readable. If you look at a screenshot, it's a big mess, but in-game it's actually very easy to decipher because even though the graphics are huge, they are very, very quick. Gameplay. A lot of people are going to get gameplay wrong because they attempt to overdo gameplay. They attempt to make something insane and out of the ordinary. A lot of people who make custom economic systems for StarCraft just completely screw it up and make a big goddamn mess and no one even cares about it. But when I go at gameplay, I focus on one element. Fun. Fun, bombastic gameplay with dynamic elements, avoiding hard counters and, you know, rock, paper, scissors and stuff like that at all costs. And the gameplay is powered by the story. So the story elements ultimately decide if this race has this kind of a unit, or if this gun does this, or how these weapons or how these spells work. The gameplay and the story have to flow together. The gameplay should not defy the story. I always add a very, very large number of units to a mod or to an RPG to keep it varied and to add a lot of content for the player to look at and a lot of content for the player to experience. I mean, obviously for something like StarCraft 2 or StarCraft, you want to keep the unit count for the multiplayer play fairly low so each unit has its own diverse role. In a campaign, you don't have to do that. You can have a whole world with hundreds of different units if you have the time to do that, and I always invest the extra time. When speaking on the terms of a campaign or an RPG, I like to make extensive usage of allied units and forces, and I'll talk about that a little bit more in another podcast, but the only projects I've ever played that actually use allied forces and units and stuff like that, and multiple enemy forces, is RCX's campaigns. And he only used that really sparingly, and I always find 1v1 situations really repetitive and boring, especially if it's B&D, but you can make them a lot more fluid and a lot more interesting by bringing in multiple factions and, you know, adding a little bit of interest to that. And the last thing I'm going to talk about gameplay is when I make, let's say, a campaign or an RPG, like a really, really big project, I base all of the faction's units on an actual functional race that if you put it into a mod and they start with their town hall and their workers, they can actually build everything and research everything that is contained in the campaign. And this is just a way of organizing it and helping me when I progress later in the project to know where everything stands and to keep them functional.
One thing, you know, I know we're not going to be discussing StarCraft 2 that much this podcast, but I'm going to kind of hint on one thing. I kind of want to know your opinion on maybe one of the major elements that, you know, maybe Blizzard has kind of missed instead of hitting in their development of StarCraft 2 from what you've just gone over.
Sound is the biggest one that they have missed. The graphics, I don't really like, but you know Blizzard's style is cartoony and really bright and happy. But it's the sound that really irks me the most about StarCraft 2. They have really, really bombed out on the sound.
Is that specifically with the complaints people have had with the Zerg unit responses? Or is this just in general, like every race is just disappointing?
The Zergs stand out to me the most, but in general the sounds are fairly bad. There's a couple of really nice sounds, like the Siege Tank attack sound, and you know, the Thor's voice is just absolutely amazing, I love it. But the Protoss voice acting as a whole is hugely disappointing. The Zerg sound is just awful, 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 and just half their attack sounds I can't actually even hear, like the Mulesk attack sound. If I jack up my volume, you know, tanks are really loud, Thors are really loud, the Mulesk sound, you can still barely hear it. Every Zerg sound response sounds very, very, very similar because they use the exact same method to make them all. They just mesh together and it just sounds a mess. They have no character. In StarCraft 1, you hear a Mulesk sound, boom, you know that's a Mulesk. I mean, you don't even have to have played StarCraft that much to know that that's the Mulesk sound because it's so iconic. You know it's the Mulesk without even seeing the Mulesk. You think, oh god, Mulesk. In StarCraft 2, if you hear that squishy sound, that's like, herp-a-derp-derp, there's another squishy sound, I wonder what that was. Sometimes when I'm commentating, I get confused of what I'm hearing because I think I hear an infestor noise when it's really just some random ambience that's playing and they just sound so similar. The Terrans sound-wise are probably the best overall, but I feel that a lot of their voice acting should be redone by people who are actually qualified voice actors because Blizzard has gotten into the habit of just using random employees to voice act, and some of their employees are actually really good voice actors, but the majority of them are not, especially whoever did the Protoss. The Immortals voice in particular is just bad. Very, very bad. I think that they should redo all of StarCraft 2's sounds.
Okay, I was actually trying to decide which one you'd go for in StarCraft 2, either the element behind sound, or you know, what I thought you might have pointed out was the hard counterness, or I guess how rock, paper, scissors of the game has become, or so far has been. It's a little different than Brood War so far, as there are really strict hard counters. Do you think that's just kind of the new direction they're going to go, and it's fine gameplay-wise, or is it another miss on like your elements table?
Hard counters are a bad idea for any game. It's something you more often see in a real-time tactics, like Dawn of War or Company of Heroes. Those are not true RTSs, they are more like real-time tactics. In an RTS, there is no room for real hard counters. In StarCraft 1, you may think, oh, sure, there are hard counters. You have the Ghost, he does crap damage to Dragoons. You have the Vulture, they do crap damage to Dragoons. But these units, they have other elements that make them very strong. The Ghost can lock down Dragoons. The Vulture has mines, and the mines are absolutely critical to Terran gameplay. These units have elements which make them very strong indirectly. In StarCraft 2, if you have a Hellion, it's practically useless against everything besides Zerglings and Workers, and even then you need a really, really expensive upgrade in order to have any effectiveness against those. And past that, outside of harassment, the Hellion is practically useless. You have the Immortal that does 20 plus 30 damage against Armored. The big problem with StarCraft 2 is, I think Browder is approaching it from a Command & Conquer standpoint because he is a Command & Conquer designer, and those games are strictly based on hard counters, and their gameplay is really, really shallow. Over the patches, they have been slowly reducing the amount of bonus damage things get. They are slowly starting to steer away from hard counters, but I think that the game needs a really massive overhaul to reach StarCraft 1's level of depth, or even come close, really. Hard counters just, they're way too strong in StarCraft 2. That's the biggest problem with the gameplay. Overall, the gameplay is a lot better than most of the other RTSs out there, like Dawn of War and Supreme Commander. But it's still very shallow right now. And I've even talked to several of the high-end players on the American servers who have expressed that they've gotten bored of the game because every game plays the same. Either someone gets rushed, or in most cases, they get hard-countered. And there's no real strategy to it. It's not interesting from a competitive standpoint, nor from a spectator standpoint. But the biggest failure overall is mostly the sounds, because you know, it is a beta. They are going to be polishing the gameplay, and I'm sure that as time goes on and more people whine about hard counters, that Browder is going to roll over in his grave and realize, oh wait, we should fix some of this. Because, you know, if they don't, well, people will just migrate to custom maps like they did with Warcraft 3, right? I mean, when you think of Warcraft 3, what do you think? Dota. Because Dota dominates Warcraft 3. Sure, there's a competitive scene for Warcraft 3, but nothing compared to Dota. There's even paid tournaments for Dota. It's a map, for Christ's sake. The same thing will happen with StarCraft 2 if they fail in the gameplay department. But one thing that maps can't fix is the sounds. Because, you know, not everyone has access to the resources Blizzard has. Not everyone can just redo all the sounds and make them sound nice again. If the sounds fail overall, then it destroys a lot more than just the gameplay portion.
Most definitely. So, as our listeners have likely guessed at this point, in future podcasts, we will be separating what Escatomesque has gone over here as an overview, the GEC, into different topics. We're going to be discussing each one in depth, and we're also going to be more pointedly, having not so much an argument, but, have our own opinions, I'm sure. I'm going to definitely coax Labyrinth into talking a lot more when we get around to sound design and graphics and things of that nature. Not exactly sure which one we're going to start with next week. It's going to be a little bit of a surprise, insofar as once we decide, I will post in the podcast thread at Campaign Creations. And my hope, personally, with this, you know, redirection of the podcast for a period of time is to kind of allow people to kind of pick at Escatomesque's brain a little bit more about how he does it, and hopefully be able to adapt that and, you know, modify those methodologies into what they're going to want to do once StarCraft 2 is out and moddable, or, you know, can have campaigns created, or in general, if anybody has any aspirations towards the game industry. So at this point, Labyrinth, did you have anything that you wanted to add, or maybe ask Escatomesque on very quickly before we come to a close tonight?
Anything to add or ask? Not really, not particularly. I'm sure questions will arise more when we discuss the GEC more in depth.
Okay, and Escatomesque, was there anything that you'd like to kind of finish with tonight?
I just wanted to again repeat that the GEC is just my personal way of approaching things. It's something I've always kept to myself. I've never even posted about it before. I've never actually talked to anyone about it before. But I thought, you know, now might be a good time to talk about it. Now might be a good time to kind of share my thought processes with the community. Because StarCraft 2 is going to be big no matter what happens to multiplayer. You know, there's going to be a very powerful editor. The engine's going to be a lot more open than Warcraft 3. You know, you've already got people making mods. You've already got people reprogramming the AI. It's going to be big. And a lot of people that are going to be modding it aren't going to be familiar with mods, or they're not going to be familiar with very large-scale projects. And a lot of these people are on Campaign Creations Forum right now. They're all thinking of making projects. You have people that are making projects. You have people that are organizing the resources. This is just a way of approaching a mod, or a campaign, or even a game, from an alternate standpoint, and putting on paper, in physical context, what it is you want to achieve. And the GEC focuses on immersion. It focuses on pros. It focuses on presenting your project to the player in a way which draws them in, which keeps them there, and which entertains them. That's something, and actually something that I want to quickly note, is that the way I handle these gameplay in particular is actually really, really similar to what Blizzard described their process in Diablo 3 and the last BlizzCon. Is to create, you know, those big, fun, flashy, bombastic things, and then tone them down and even them out and make them in a way which fits into the rest of the game. And I can go more depth into that, and we'll be going more in depth to that. So the things I've outlined are just kind of bullet points that I wrote out just to kind of give an idea of what each of the elements are. But each of the elements go very deep into psychological aspects as well, which we'll get into later. So, you know, if you got any questions at all related to the elements or in general, or about a specific mod, go ahead and ask, because I'll cover those. You know, this whole thing is open now. I'll be covering the entire thing top to bottom, and it'll take a while, but it'll be there for you to consider if you're interested in it.
and I'm most certain that people are interested, and if, once again, if anybody asks any questions, I'll make sure to grill Escanamesk on them for answers. Otherwise, there's even the possibility that some people may come on here kind of as guests who can, you know, ask you some of their own personal questions. Alright, well, at this point, it seems like a good point to close the podcast for the night. So, Labyrinth, final words?
Good night, and good luck.
And his Scotto mask?
Captain Planet Forever!
And, well, actually, I kind of missed what Labyrinth said, so peace out.